thousands and thousands of deaths occur every year as a result of inactivity. And it doesn't only cause death. It causes high blood pressure, heart disease, anxiety, depression, cancer, type 2 diabetes, strokes, osteoporosis, infections, and obesity. And even though we know all that, we've let it grow to epidemic proportions. It's time to act. Stand by, because Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Have you ever calculated how many hours you sit down on a typical day? If you're the average American, then your answer is 11 hours. That's right, and that puts you at risk of sitting disease, just like Trudy, however she's found a fun way to combat it.
I work in an office environment, and so I'm basically sitting and working at a computer most of the day, so I'm not as active during the work time. The time I have set aside for exercising is scheduling time with my husband as like a date so that I make sure in my schedule I have time not only with him but then to exercise as well. So it's like a dual purpose of being able to spend time and exercise, and then you have a motivation between the two because you're spending time together and you're exercising, and then you have that bonding as well. When we first got married, my husband was an avid cyclist. So he went out cycling anywhere between 2,500 to 3,000 miles a year. And when I first started, I didn't hardly exercise at all on the bicycle. So it took a little while to get up to speed. And the easiest way for us to do that was on a tandem. So we purchased a tandem and away we went, and that was some almost 20 years ago. We typically go anywhere between 3 as many times as 5 days a week. Like anything, in order to be able to get something done, you're going to have to put it in your schedule. And for me, the easiest way to do, when I have someone who says they want my time, it's like, well, I have a date with my husband. And most of the time the response to that is, oh, well, that's in your calendar. It's a date. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
Have you ever scheduled exercise on your calendar, like your other appointments? On today's show, we have a low-calorie, high-taste breakfast, a dynamic guest, and you don't want to miss Working Out with Sean. But first, the news. In the headlines today, just 2 minutes an hour, activity reduces lymphoma and less atrial fib. Trading 2 minutes of sitting for 2 minutes of walking every hour may reduce the risk of dying by 33%. Previous studies show that extended sitting doubles the risk of type 2 diabetes and increases the risk of heart disease, cancer, and premature death. So if you have a sedentary job, how much activity is protective? Well, for 3 years, over 3,000 participants in the USN Haines survey wore devices to measure intensity and frequency of activity. Researchers compared sitting, standing, and light activity, and they found that short bursts of light activity, such as walking, cleaning, and gardening, was associated with a 33% lower risk of premature death in those who spent more than half their waking hours sitting down. So why not set a reminder on your phone each hour to get up and move around? A lifetime of vigorous exercise may lower the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma by 30%. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, or NHL for short, is a form of cancer that affects the lymph nodes. Researchers from the University of British Columbia, Canada, studied more than 800 men with NHL and age-matched them with men without NHL. They then compared self-recorded levels of physical activity in each decade of life. Men who had done the most vigorous activity were much less likely to have NHL than those who were the least active. Can you recall when you last engaged in vigorous activity that took your breath away? Being physically fit reduces the risk of atrial fibrillation, or AF for short, especially in obese individuals, according to a new study. It's known that poor cardiorespiratory fitness is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease and death. So researchers set about measuring the impact of regular physical activity on AF. They measured the physical fitness of almost 65,000 adults, none of whom had AF. Several years later, 7% had developed it. The more fit were less likely to be affected, and this held true especially for the obese. It's good to know that when you get benefit from being fit, you also get it, even though you're fat. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Our guest today is Dr. Darren Morton, lead researcher with the Lifestyle Research Centre at Avondale College in Australia. He has a PhD in human physiology, which has made him a world expert on the pain we commonly call the stitch. I asked him how sitting disease or the sedentary lifestyle has come about.
We created it, in a sense. And really what's happened is, you know, we've seen over the past, well, essentially since the start of the Industrial Revolution, we created all these ingenious devices that allowed us to move less. And so, you know, over the years, as that's escalated, and now we have, you know, we live in a world where most of us sort of spend our days doing this on a keypad. What it's meant is that we're just moving far less than we ever have previously. And in fact, the statistics on this are really quite frightening.
Yeah, I gave you permission to go ahead and frighten us.
Okay, then, here we go. So, you know, estimates are that we're 60 to 70% less active today than we were, probably our great-great-grandparents were. Now, to put that in terms of, you know, what does that mean, a 60 to 70% reduction? It's probably like walking about 10 miles less every day. So you think about it. So our great-great-grandparents were probably walking about 10 miles more just in their everyday activities by as they went about their business, their work, rest and play. And I mean rest there as well, because even the type of activities we do today for our rest and recreation are very different to what, you know, historically was done.
So what would be different in just leisure activities back then?
Yeah, well, I mean, I
presume that's what you mean by rest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and the big thing that is so many of us now spend so much time in screen-based activities. And so, you know, we think about kids. I mean, this is a major crisis for kids. Many of the peak bodies now are recommending that kids shouldn't be getting more than 2 hours of screen time a day. And many, many of them are getting vastly more than that. So, you know, where once upon a time, and I remember as a kid, you know, my mum would be there, "You boys, you know, Jason and Darren," my brother, "come on inside, it's time to go to bed and have a bath." And you know, we'd be out there playing cricket or, you know, kicking the football, and you couldn't even see where the ball was coming anymore. It'd be dark outside. Whereas nowadays we have kids sitting in front of screens, you know, playing computer games, watching television. And so, yeah, this is making having a huge impact on our overall physical activity levels.
And I guess with urbanisation, it's not safe to play out in the dark anymore. I know I was the same when I was little. Yeah. I was playing out in the dark.
Yeah.
But it's not safe anymore, so we don't have the safe neighbourhoods and we don't have the facilities to play out.
Yeah, and you know, we actually look at the decline in the number of kids that use active transport to get to work, for example, to school.
Yeah.
We tend not to put them to work that quite that early.
Not anymore.
In life, but yeah, just, you know, where many once upon a time a lot of kids would walk to school or ride their bikes to school, and there is this, you know, particularly in, you know, many of the developed world, there's this sort of stranger danger fear where, you know, parents aren't as happy for their kids to do that. But, you know, that once again, that's taken a toll.
Well, it certainly has. In the next segment, we'll be talking about other barriers to activity, and Dr. Morton will give us some simple ways to overcome them. Now, here's another perspective, and after the break, I'll see you in the kitchen.
It's beautiful sunshine today, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely. Oh,
yeah.
So nice.
I've really enjoyed our walk thus far. You know, other than being in the great outdoors, what are the benefits of daily activity?
Well, let's play Exercise ABCs.
What's that?
Well, like, exercise makes you agile and athletic.
Oh, so like B would be blood pressure, it normalizes it.
Yep, and C would be cardiovascular health.
D is diabetes, it helps lower your blood sugars.
True. E is for endorphins. that mood enhancer that naturally comes with exercise.
F is for flow, that is blood flow. Perfect health requires perfect circulation.
G is for get up and go. When you've got up and gone, you've got plenty of get up and go.
H is for healthy heart.
I is for indigestion. If you walk gently after meals, you digest your food better.
Did you know J is for junk food? That's right, it kills the desire for it.
Oh, speaking of killing, K is for killer cells. Your natural killer cells are boosted by exercise. That means you can fight viruses and cancer.
L is for LDL cholesterol, it lowers it.
M is for muscles. All our muscles get stronger, including our heart muscle.
Well, I like that one. N is for anywhere. You can exercise indoors or outdoors, so there's no excuse.
O is for optimal health. You can't have it without exercise.
Well, P is for pain.
Pain?
That's right. As a massage therapist, I know that exercise reduces or eliminates back pain completely.
Q is for queues at the doctor's office. If you exercise, you're much less likely to be in one.
I like that one. Now, R is for rest. If you get daily exercise, you'll rest much better at nighttime.
And S is for strength, and we need strength whatever our age.
That's right. T is for tension and stress. We'll get less of that or reduce it.
U is for under the weather. You won't be under the weather once you've been out and got some movement going.
V is for volume. We'll get much more blood volume at each heartbeat.
And W is for weight. You cannot remove your weight unless you've been exercising.
I like X. It means extra years added to our lives.
Which brings us to Y, because that's for youth. And exercise is actually the fountain of youth.
And that brings us to the very last one, Z for zeal. It gives us a zeal and zest for life and health.
Well, I think exercise should be on every doctor's orders.
Well, come on, Doc, let's go.
Okay. Welcome back. We're in the kitchen and Phil's here. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
We're looking like breakfast here.
This is a terrific breakfast or maybe even a light dinner. Yeah. But to me, it's a great way to start the day, especially with grapefruit. To me, that's sort of a tradition. And I think it is a lot for a lot of people. So I've taken the traditional breakfast of grapefruit and we're going to add a little bit more to it, give it a completely different taste, and hopefully everyone likes it.
Wonderful. Well, I see it's got my favorite ingredient, which is bananas. But tell us what all goes in it.
Sure. It's very simple. We've got a 24-ounce jar or 2 cups of red grapefruit segments, 1 cup of sliced banana, a tablespoon of fresh chopped mint, and a tablespoon of honey. It's very basic, very simple.
Yeah, great.
So to start, what we're going to do is we've basically separated the grapefruit from the liquid, and we've kept back about 1/4 of it. And that's going to be used as the liquid within this. So this is just a little bit of the liquid that came with the grapefruit.
So you're suggesting this came out of a jar, so that makes it really convenient and quick.
Very convenient and very quick. The one thing that I recommend watching out for is a lot of times they'll say no sugar added, but yeah, just underneath it says that it's artificially sweetened, or the juice is artificially sweetened.
Oh.
And so I feel like you want to stay away from that because they're kind of hiding the fact. But you can find some that are all natural and just kind of
young
play
is that.
So what we did is we put in the grapefruit. We're putting in your favorite, the bananas.
Oh yes, can't have breakfast without bananas.
And we're just basically including all of the ingredients and putting them in. That one's a little bit tricky to get out to get mixed in, but we'll get it mixed in.
Interesting addition, this mint. I'm curious to see how this tastes.
To me, I love adding mint, especially where you don't expect it.
Really? Yep. Yeah, you're good at the herbs and the flavors. I always forget about putting herbs in my cooking.
To me, it adds a depth, kind of like a, I won't say a bouquet, but kind of a bouquet. Like it's, you don't just have one type of flour. I don't like just having one type of food.
Yes.
I like to just include as many as possible.
Right.
If it tastes good.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That looks beautiful. I could get up on a nice summer's morning, I could sit out on the deck and eat that very happily, I think.
So that would wake you up? That
yes,
would get you up in the morning?
Yes, it would just have a... Yeah, I hope you're not expecting to eat any because that looks about the right size for me.
Maybe I'll just grab a quick spoonful before you take it. I'm going to get a little bite with the banana as well.
Mm. Oh, that is amazing.
Mm.
That tastes so much better than I thought it would. Not being rude or anything, it's just incredible. That is so quick and easy. You have got to try it. Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome.
Looks great, right? Remember, you can go to the website for the recipe. 20 years ago, couch potato Trudy married professional cyclist Phil. Since there was no way that she could keep up with him, they bought a tandem, and ever since, they've scheduled dates on a bicycle built for two. Here's more.
Some of the challenges that we face in cycling is anywhere from the cars that we pass, that pass us, they're not paying attention. That's probably one of our biggest ones. When I'm out on the road and riding,
I'm the one watching the traffic, telling my husband what is happening around us, especially at corners and intersections. It also gives me an opportunity to pray for those people who pass us on the road. On the back of the tandem, I can spend time talking to God, spending time with my husband, and exercising.
Last fall, my husband had a bicycle accident, which then we were off the bike for a good 2 to 3 months while he healed. And that became a challenge because on a tandem, you ride together. And so I was having to, we actually found another way of exercising, which I just went to the gym. But he encourages me every day, okay, get up and go to the gym. So it's still a partnership in exercising together. Every year, if you're off the bike for any period of time, it's always, you feel like you're out of shape. And so keeping in shape all year and never leaving exercise is the easiest way of doing it. Here in Maryland, we have winters that are not as cold as Michigan, so most of the time we can ride once or twice in a month, and that carries us through at least until like March. But this year it's been rainy and wet here in Maryland, so it's been a little bit more challenging to get on the bike more than 2 or 3 times a week.
Brr, cycling on cold, wet winter's day, I'm too much of a sissy for that. Walking or going to the gym just suits me fine. In the last segment, Dr. Darren Morton, exercise physiologist, was explaining why we have an inactivity crisis. Now, here's more.
Yeah, well, there's probably two big other areas, and one of them is the nature of our work. And, you know, once upon a time, we would front up to work and we'd, you know, swing an axe all day, chopping down trees. Now, even what traditionally was very manual type labour has changed. It's become more automated. We have machinery in which does it, the work for us.
Even around the house, you know, I think about the washing machines
yes.
that I used as a child compared to the press of a button now.
That's right.
So even for women who are not necessarily chopping down trees,
yeah.
even in Australia. Yes, you're right. It's even housework has changed.
Absolutely. And you know, and even very what we would associate as very manual labour, like, you know, take coal mining, for example. You know, where once upon a time they were sort of, you know, crawling on their hands and knees through holes and digging with picks. Nowadays, it's entirely automated. You know, that we have the miners is actually now a mechanical device which goes to the coal face and there's someone there behind it pulling levers. So, yeah, the nature of our work has changed substantially. And many of us spend a lot of our time sitting, and we're not meant to be bottom dwellers. But we spend far too much time sitting, you know, in relatively sedentary behaviours. This doesn't expend that much energy.
No, unfortunately it doesn't.
Unfortunately.
So we've got work, we've got leisure. What's the third area that you mentioned?
The third area is really travel. And this is a great concern to governments around the world. You know, whereas once upon a time we used to get from A to B by using our legs, and that was very good for us. Nowadays we have, you know, planes, trains and automobiles to do the work for us. And so there's actually a real push nowadays In big cities, for example, you see the development of a lot more cycle paths where the governments are trying to encourage active transport. In fact, you can go to some parts of the world now. I think Paris was one of the first to do it, but I know in Australia we have a couple of our capital cities which have now implemented bicycle networks where you can actually, you know, it might cost you a small rental fee for the day, but you can actually grab a bike out of a particular holding station, ride to where you need to go, put it back in another holding station, and so you've got this extensive, this commuting, active commuting network around the city.
Yes, I've done that in London as well, so those have been around for a while. And even in the city where I live, it's not a very big city, but there's 90 miles of walking and cycle track.
Yeah.
And so you see such a difference in the level of activity of people. So it's really good to see governments coming on board.
Yeah.
Now, in your book, you talk about the three-step plan to counter this trend.
Mm.
So what are your three steps? We'll just run through them.
So basically, you know, the argument that I have is that we're facing this inactivity crisis. The data for that is undeniable. So how can we be safe for the inactivity crisis? Well, we can cry and apply SOS. And so that stands for sit less, the first S. The O is oxygenate. And then the last S is strengthen and stretch.
Okay, so let's start with the sit less. I think you do sit less, move more, don't you?
Sit less, move more, that's right.
So tell us about that.
Yeah,
what are some ways that we can do that?
Or, just to come back to the point I had before, that, you know, we definitely know that we are sitting far more than we should be. And in fact, the evidence that's coming through now is that what we're discovering is that sit time, your prolonged sit time, is actually an independent risk factor for all manner of disease, particularly chronic diseases.
Right, so we're seeing a whole lot of research around this now, aren't we?
Yes, this is getting huge. So what we're actually discovering is that even people who are good girls and boys and know, you know, the public recommendations, the population guidelines often that you should be doing 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity each day, and we'll come to that when we talk about the O, the oxygenate. But even for people that are doing that, if they spend the rest of their day just bottom dwelling, you know, for prolonged periods of time, that their risk of chronic disease jumps back up. And it's very marked. So that's what we're actually saying, that this is sit time is an independent risk factor. It's independent of, you know, even your exercise behaviours.
So are there now guidelines as just looking at this research? I know it's not official guidelines, but are there guidelines to say this should be the longest stretch of bottom dwelling that you should have before you get up? And you should exercise for this amount, like, would it be 55 minutes and then 5 minutes walking, or is it 2 hours and 10 minutes walking?
Yeah,
tell
that's
us
a great question.
What's recommended? Because I get this asked by our viewers.
Yeah. So what I will say is that this is an emerging area. In fact, this whole area is almost a new discipline of research. They're calling it inactivity physiology. But that said, it's relatively early days. It's really just the large epidemiological studies that are showing that people that do this, you know, and there's a lot of people in this situation. And I mean, I think even in my situation, I spent a lot of time, you know, writing articles or whatever it may be at a desk. Now, I'm very diligent. I go and do my exercise each day. But what we know is that people like me, if I am not very intentional about breaking up that prolonged period of sitting, and this seems to be the important part, it's prolonged period of sitting, uninterrupted sitting. So the question is, well, how long can I sit for? And that we don't have any really hard data on it. But what we do, some guidelines suggest that, you know, definitely no more than an hour. You want to at least get to your feet. And the reason for it is that right now, just sitting here like this, our muscles are essentially completely relaxed. There's no tone to them in our legs. Just by standing, what happens is all of a sudden the level of activation of our muscles, it's very low level, but it still is there. And we know that if you sit for prolonged periods of time, particularly if it starts to extend into 2 hours or greater, that the actual enzymes, what's going on inside our muscles starts to change. It actually has adverse effects on our cholesterol levels, changes our blood sugar levels in negative ways. So personally say what is a really a great idea is every half an hour. If you can get onto your feet for just a couple of minutes, that would be the ideal. But we don't have any hard and fast data to tell us exactly this is the goal. What I will say is this is definitely, this notion of sitting less is beginning to feature more and more in population guidelines. For example, in Australia, we used to have our National Physical Activity Guidelines. Now the latest iteration has just come out. It's called the National Physical Activity and Sedentary Behaviour Guidelines. So there's the two elements to it. You know, it's A, yes, you need to be active, do some physical activity, but B, just don't sit around too much either.
Well, that's great to hear because you're leading the world in obesity. So that's good to know that your government has made a step in the right direction.
Yes. Yeah, it's great to be good at something, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that was the prize we were after, but anyway.
No one wants that prize. Stay with us. There's more after the break. But first, this. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 13 reads this way. The loafer says there's a lion on the loose. If I go out, I'll be eaten alive. That word picture is funny, to a point. However, on reflection, many of us make equally silly excuses for not being more active. Instead of wild animals waiting outside our door, ready to eat us alive, we say it's too wet or it's too cold, it's too hot or it's too dangerous. Now, your fears about walking around your neighbourhood alone may be legitimate, but is there another way you can be active? Like joining a walking club, an exercise group, or a gym? Even owning a treadmill and having a few dumbbells. God's plan is for us to be physically active and not to be loafers. After all, a loafer is a lazy person, and none of us wants that reputation. Besides, Proverbs 21 verse 25 says that the desire of a lazy man kills him. So push yourself, get out there and enjoy the abundant life. Welcome back. It's time to get into the exercise. Sean, what have you got for us?
I got some resistant bands and keeping it very simple, working together.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, partner exercises.
Absolutely.
Okay.
A couple different things about partner exercises. It's a great way to get somebody else engaged, especially if you're trying to get someone fit. It's a kind of sneaky way to get them involved in exercise. But just say, come with me, you know, do it with me, right?
Yep.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to back.
All right.
Okay. And we're gonna do a squat. I know Doc is a little bit shorter than me, but we're gonna press your back against mine, okay? And squat down. Go, 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 go! And push against mine, back up. Down again, all the way down, push against mine, and back up. One more time, all the way down. I'm all, put it all.
Whoa!
And back up, all right? This is a great way to get them used to trusting you, okay? And kind of building that trust.
Yeah. Do you think we should trust him?
I did put a little weight on you.
I'm at his mercy.
So what we're going to do, the first exercise is a forward lunge using a resistant band. This just adds a little bit more weight, again, at the same time, giving your partner an opportunity to be a part of your exercise experience. There you go. Big lunge, big lunge. The more I pull, the more resistance and the more her quads have to work to go forward.
Okay? And now your partner will be surprised.
Yep. Then you switch. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you switch, okay? So that's a forward lunge using a resistant band. And then I'm gonna show you how to do a lateral lunge, right? Using the resistant band as well. So this leg stays straight, and all what you do is go to the side, okay? Back here. Back here. Make sure you're breathing, relax. The weight goes all the way in this quad. This leg stays straight, and you come back to the center.
Mm.
Great way to work that quad.
Yeah. And I didn't get a holiday, you would have noticed.
So you know what we're gonna do next?
Okay.
Let's work some biceps. Everyone loves nice biceps.
Yeah.
All right?
All right.
So what we're gonna do is use your resistant bands to work biceps together in 3, 2, and 1. Go. There you go, all the way and back. Now, the further you go, of course, the more resistance you get.
Mm.
But this, again, is your sneaky way of getting them used to exercising. So keep it simple, but just increase the time just a little bit more, okay?
And it adds fun to your workout.
It does. Talk about something, bring up a topic, put the timer on for a minute, you know? A minute and a half.
We all know Sean's minute.
My minute is like 2 minutes.
His minutes are 2 minutes long.
But think about it. This is a fat burning level right here. It's not pushing your fat, your heart rate up really high. And then you can get to this position right here and have them contract a little bit. The more they contract, the more the muscle starts to recruit fat, put into the bloodstream, and use it as energy.
That's right.
Okay, so be sneaky. There's a purpose behind what you're doing. But you got to get your partner up. You got to get your kids moving.
Yeah.
You know, just fun.
You do. It's fun.
Very fun. Okay, so what I want you to do is take your right leg, put it over your left. What we're going to do is stretch out your legs, okay? Since we've worked the legs a little bit on that forward lunge and lateral lunge, and come all the way down. Come all the way back up. Take a nice deep breath. Switch. And back down. This is a great way to stretch out your hamstring, which is right between your legs, your back of your legs, and your glutes, okay?
Yeah.
Stretch makes you prepared for the next exercise, the next day of exercise. So there you go.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome.
Excellent. So get a partner. Don't miss on doing these.
Men, do you want to gain an extra 4 years while looking and feeling great? Researchers in Loma Linda, California found the answer. For men, thinner is better, particularly as you age. The Adventist Health Study looked at men aged 75 to 99 and found the thinner men lived about 4 years longer. A healthy weight, even past the seventh decade of life, made a difference. Maintaining a healthy weight for your entire life is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Glenda emailed and said, how much protein do I need to eat per meal or per day? I'm 58 years old, beginning to exercise after being sedentary through the winter. I need to lose 60 pounds and don't want to overwhelm my kidneys with too much protein, yet I want to keep my blood sugar up and feel good. Well, that's a great question. Women need about 45 grams of protein a day. Men, by the way, 55. Now, if you're wanting to lose weight, you could aim to have about 15 to 20 grams of protein for breakfast, about the same for lunch, so that you don't get hungry, and then have a small meal in the evening that contains the remaining 5 to 10 grams of protein. Janet asks, my daughter has Hashimoto's disease and is being treated with thyroxin and tetroxin, but she's still suffering from the symptoms and side effects. What else can she do to get well again? By the way, there's no family history. Well, Hashimoto's disease is actually an autoimmune disease. That means her own immune system is attacking her thyroid gland. Something in her environment or in her history has triggered that situation. So part of the solution would be to try and reduce exposure to that trigger. Now, we don't know what that is, most people don't, but many people with Hashimoto's find improvement by excluding gluten and dairy. They feel better when they keep sugar out of their diet. So I would encourage her to eat a whole food, plant-based diet, gluten-free, dairy-free, supplement with vitamin B12 and vitamin D, and have plenty of omega-3 fats like flaxseed oil. You may also wish to add turmeric or curcumin, that's the active ingredient of turmeric, which is an antioxidant and an anti-inflammatory. Sandra says, on a vegetarian diet, I have a hard time stabilizing my blood sugar and I lack stamina even when I eat beans, nuts and whole grains. I do limit the fruit. I'm 59, I have reactive hypoglycemia, problems sleeping through the night, allergies, migraines, and memory challenges. Any suggestions? Well, I'm sure the memory challenge is to do with not sleeping well. But on your list of what you're eating, I don't see any mention of vegetables, and they should make up half your plate. That's coloured vegetables, not potatoes and root crops so much. So that's greens, carrots, and all those lovely colours. A quarter of the plate should be legumes, and just one quarter whole grains. And legumes should be your focus, especially if you have diabetes. Now, you've got so many problems, I actually recommend that you consult a good nutritionist. And you may find the book Goodbye Diabetes helpful for stabilizing your sugar. That's Goodbye Diabetes. It's written by Dr. Wes Youngberg, who's a nutritionist. And by the way, he's just released his latest book, Healthy, a Hello Healthy, which may also help your other challenges. Thanks for those questions. If you have a question, phone, email, text, or Facebook. And now, let's go shopping. Strawberries were mentioned in ancient Roman literature in references to their medicinal uses. The French brought them wild from the forest into their gardens in the 1300s. Art in the Renaissance used the strawberry to symbolize perfect righteousness, and at that time, the plant was used to treat depression. Now it's rightfully used for food, mostly eaten raw, but with high calorie additives like sugar and cream. However, they are so yummy, just as they are. High in fiber and potassium, research shows that they boost the immune system. They're antioxidant, and they're mildly anti-inflammatory. They may have benefits against cancer, aging, inflammation, eye health, and neurological disease. Some people are allergic to the red ones, so those people might want to try the white ones instead. Bon appetit. On today's show, we're talking with Dr. Darren Morton, exercise physiologist, about inactivity and what we can do to move more.
So there's some really simple things we can do, obviously, to sit less. And the first one is just get off your bottom, you know, stand up more frequently. And, you know, I have, for example, at home a stand-up workstation. So I actually will type, you know, write from a standing position and move, you know, chop and change from time to time. When you travel, obviously, if you can break up the journey, you know, certainly they say you shouldn't go for more than 2 hours or so anyway, but get out, walk around, move a little bit. In public transport, if you have to sit on a train, well, you don't have to sit there all the time. You can stand up periodically as well. In meetings, long meetings, even explain at the beginning of the meeting that, hey, in the interest of my health and my alertness too, because we know that it makes a difference there, just stand up at the back of the room or, you know, behind your chair. So just trying to take measures. When the phone rings, stand up while talking on it, put it back down, sit back down to do your work. Just those small things we know have a difference. They make an effect.
Great. Now, your second step of the SOS. First one was sit less, move more.
Yes.
Second one you said was oxygenate. Explain that for us.
Yeah, so we know that oxygen is the most essential nutrient needed by the body. You know, you can go for several weeks without eating. It's not a lot of fun, but you can do it. You can go for, you know, a couple of days without drinking water, but you can only go a couple of minutes really without having oxygen. And what we know is that oxygen is needed for every part of the body for health and healing. And the best way to deliver oxygen to the tissues of the body, even the outermost limits, is by doing activities that increase our breathing and our heart rate. And so oxygenate really refers to what people often associate more as exercise or as physical activity.
Because you're breathing harder and you're circulating faster.
That's exactly right.
So you're getting it in and you're moving it around.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
It makes sense. And I know that at this point everyone goes, oh no, this is the hard part. You know, I could do that sit less thing. I'm happy to stand every now and then, but now you want me to actually move like and do things that make me breathe more. Well, the good news is that all the data is showing that you actually don't have to go that hard or vigorously. In fact, what we know is that you get excellent outcomes from just engaging in what they call moderate intensity physical activity. Now, what's moderate? Well, it's different for different people, but it's what you personally would judge as probably a 3 to 4 out of 10 in effort. So that's not, you know, that's not clutching your chest, lather of sweat, sort of, you know, tongue hanging out. 3 to 4 out of 10 in effort. It's the kind of thing that you could do and still hold a conversation,
and
but
as
not
you
sing.
And as you become fitter,
that
then
will change.
It will change up.
That's
won't
right.
It?
But it's still a 3 to 4 out of 10 for you. You know, so it's not like people go, you know, I try and encourage groups to do more physical activity and often play this word association game. I say, when I say the word exercise, what's the first word that jumps to your mind? And people, you know, the most common response is pain. Exercise equals pain. Yeah, this is what I see in community groups that I speak to. And, you know, we know that in life we do things to avoid pain.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a little wonder why people don't want to exercise. Well, here's the thing. It doesn't need to be painful. You know, a 3 to 4 out of 10 in effort. Yeah, and for me, this might be a brisk walk, might be a gentle swim or a gentle ride. But we know that if people can participate in that kind of behaviour, and the ideal is, well, the population guidelines say about 30 minutes most days of the week. We know that your risk of dying from a whole range of different disease states just goes straight down. So, yeah, it's a very good goal to have. Oxygenate for, you know, 30 minutes or more if you can, minutes on most days.
And step three, another S?
Step three, another S. There's sort of two S's there, but SOS sounded a bit odd, so I just kept with SOS. And this refers to strengthen and stretch. You see, what we're discovering is that that people, because of the nature of our work environments and, you know, our travel and our recreation, we actually don't use our muscles enough. You know, it's great to actually get oxygen in and get that to the outermost extremes of our body, but you can actually, you know, go for a daily walk, but still not actually work the muscles that are there to move and make you move, particularly in the upper body region.
So this is where the recommendation is of 20 minutes twice a week of resistance exercise.
Yeah.
That would include this, what is it, stretch and...
Yeah, so a little bit of stretching, but strengthening sort of exercises. And, you know, one thing I always say to people is that doesn't mean you have to become a gym junkie. You know, it's not like getting down into some little sweat box and grunting and groaning and making all these abnormal noises. It's actually, you can, it's things that you can do at home, using equipment from around the house, you know, even books, you know, holding books in your hand, and just these sorts of activities that work the muscles that are designed to be worked. We know that it's incredibly good for people's health and well-being.
And you can do your own, use your own body weight, you can use stretch bands. It's
absolutely,
it's really simple, and it can be very private because people worry about that.
That's exactly right. People, yeah, often don't want to go to gyms, but what we know is that often it's people think that these strengthening and stretching exercises are for sort of young males eager to impress the fairer gender, but the reality is it's not the case. In fact, if someone was say to me, who can most benefit from doing resistance, we call them resistance type exercises or strengthening type exercises, I would actually say older females. You know, because what we know, it not only strengthens the bones, it actually strengthens the muscle. Strengthens the muscles, it also strengthens the bones. And we know that, you know, particularly postmenopausal women are prone to osteoporosis and the like. What also we know is that for people with diabetes, strengthening exercises really helps improve their blood sugar control.
Lots of good reasons to be active. Don't go away. We're back with more after the break. And we're back. Trudy was in the inactivity rut when she married a professional cyclist. Here she reflects on what biking together has meant for their relationship.
If we're not riding from home, we'll put the van, put the tandem in the van and travel places. It gives us time to talk, gives us time to spend together, and we're not only doing and going places and then cycling. Cycling has impacted my overall health in that it gives me an avenue to exercise out in the fresh air, sunshine, which is part of a healthy lifestyle. Our goal every year for cycling is we like to put in anywhere between 2,000 and 2,500 miles a year. And this year we're a little bit behind because of our slow start. So unless the weather here in Maryland changes, we'll have to do a lot of cycling in order to get caught up. If I wanted to motivate someone to go exercise, my first thing would be to find a partner to do it. A spouse is great because you live in the same house, and if you can both do it together and find something you both enjoy, that's the best. If that's not an option, then the next one is to find a partner that's an accountable partner that you can exercise either together or at the same place or the same time is always the best.
Wow, doesn't that look great? Out there with your spouse having fun in the sun. I must say, for some of us, it's hard to stay motivated like that. So here's more from motivational speaker and author of a book called Live More Active, Dr. Darren Morton, to motivate us.
There's a classic little adage that says the world is full of people who know what to do, but just don't do what they know. And I mean, that describes most of us. And so, look, when it comes to motivation, this is, it's a really, you know, multifaceted thing. And there's a whole list of different strategies that, you know, I talk about in the book that are worth being mindful of that can help you, you know, become active for good. And it's not just activity too, it's other behaviour changes as well. And so, you know, first thing, I suppose, is really getting to know yourself and know what works for you. And there's a whole, you know, I think it was Plato that said, know thyself. And there's real wisdom in that. For example, are you an introvert or an extrovert? You know, where do you get your energy from? Now, personally, as you can tell, I'm an introvert. And I am, I really am. And you know, I love being, I love people, I love being around people, but I actually recharge my batteries from being alone. And so...
So you're probably a bit of an ambivert, actually.
Ambivert? I haven't heard that term before. I like that.
We've done a series on brain health on the show. Yes. And so our brain expert says there are ambiverts.
Ambiverts?
So yes, you're an ambivert. But,
well, I'm learning
but
stuff.
Yes, and I'm an extrovert, so I get my energy from others.
From others. Mm. So, you know, you would be obviously best to set yourself up for success is to be active with other people. And that can be really valuable. So if you're an extrovert, then it's a great idea to, you know, maybe perhaps join a gym. Yeah, not, even if you don't like that environment, or perhaps join a group fitness program, or team up with a friend, right? And because there's something very powerful about saying to a friend, yeah, I'll meet you there at, you know, 7 this morning, tomorrow morning, and, you know, when the alarm goes off, you think, if it was by myself, you'd turn it off, but that measure of accountability. So are you introvert or extrovert? As an introvert, I love to go running by myself. You know, that for me, I recharge by doing that. So knowing yourself. You know, speaking of the whole alarm clock in the morning, you know, don't make the new behaviour that you're trying to adopt more painful than it needs to be. And, you know, if you're not a morning person, this whole notion of getting up an hour earlier to do exercise, it's just going to reinforce this behaviour. No one likes the sound of an alarm. You know, do they? Like when you hear it go on in the morning, and if the first thing that you associate with is now exercise, it's just cementing this idea that exercise equals pain and not
right.
And
because your subconscious mind is enjoyed. Yeah, your subconscious mind is making a link that you don't need it to make. Right.
That's
it. You need
to
do it differently.
Yeah. So you know, are you a morning person? You know, do you like to you know participate with other people or is it more yourself? So. You know, some of those issues, and there's a whole raft of these for getting to know what works best for you. That's one thing.
Now, a lot of people say, well, you know, morning's a busy time for me, but when I get home in the evening, I'm just too tired, I don't have the energy. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, and this is an intriguing thing to me, because many of us, I know of many, many people who they get up, they sit down and eat their breakfast, and then they hop on a car or on a train. They travel 2 hours sometimes to work, you know, if they're commuting into the city. They sit there for 8 to 10 hours doing this, and then they hop in the train or car and then sit down and drive home. And when they get home, they're exhausted. I've got no energy, you know, like they've expended this much throughout the course of that. They should be a ball of energy. They should be like, knock off time. As soon as the buzzer goes, it should be like, woohoo! They should be jumping up and I just want to go do something. But, you know, what we know is that expending energy creates energy. You know, and sometimes it just, you know, it's hard to get on a roll, you know, but I actually often say to people, the way you get on a roll is to start rolling. And, you know, sometimes the first couple of steps are the tough one, but we know that when people actually make an effort to be active, even though they might not feel they have the energy for it, their energy grows and their capacity for it grows.
So just push through, get out there, and pretty soon you'll find that you have energy because you've started to expend energy.
Absolutely. And you know, your brain's actually wired like that. We actually know that you actually have millions of little nerves throughout your body called proprioceptors that feed information up to your emotional brain. And this is why when we start to actually move in a dynamic way, it actually creates feelings of well-being in us. Right, with this exercise, physical activity is one of the best anecdotes for people with low mood. Right, we know this because you know, I often say to people, if the whole idea, as I've mentioned earlier, of doing 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity is just abhorrent to you, if it's like, that just sounds like the worst idea ever, I often say to people, well, forget about 30 minutes, just go for 5 minutes. Can you just go for a 5 minute walk? And everyone goes, oh, I think I can do a 5 minute walk. And I say, that's great. And if at the end of the 5 minutes you feel like it, go for another 25. And, you know, invariably when people it's starting to move, you know, just that first step, you know, just say to yourself, I'll put my shoes on and I'll walk to the letterbox. And if you can do that, often it gets easier.
We got a minute left.
Right.
And this is a big question, but for weight loss, isn't it easier just to slide 100 calories off the side of your plate than to burn 100 calories in exercise.
Yeah, and it probably is, because, you know, walking for, well, one bottle of, say, soft drink, soda, I forget the measures, but, you know, a standard bottle, yeah, it's probably going to take you about 40 minutes of brisk walking to burn the calories off on that. And so for the consensus seems to be that for losing weight, yeah, pay very careful attention to your diet, but the studies consistently show that to keep weight off, physical activity is where it's at. And obviously the two work together.
The two work together. You can't do one without the
other. You can lose,
but you can't maintain.
Particularly for sustained weight loss, physical activity is paramount.
Life in the 21st century is built around sitting, but we need to aggressively resist the temptation to sit down to do it all. As adults, why don't we set limits on our leisure time screen time? If you commute, think about ways to travel under your own steam, walking, cycling, or even using public transport, anything that's more active than sitting behind the wheel of your car. And during the day, apply the principles of SOS, sit less, oxygenate, strengthen and stretch. Make a day to do physical activity for half an hour, 5 days a week. Make exercise fun, work out the time of day that suits you best, and stick to it. Like Trudy and Phil, you might exercise with your spouse or a buddy, or like Darren, you might prefer just doing it alone. Whatever works for you, just do it. Thanks for watching Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.